Well, they call him the crypto hunter, John Rhodes. Find out why when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Crypto hunter John Rhodes has been called the world's foremost authority on ancient reptilian humanoids or reptilian aliens. His pioneering work investigating claims of reptilian alien contact and years of presenting his research to the public resulted in the creation of entirely new genre of study in the UFO community. And here he is back on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, John, how are you?
Good to be speaking with you again, of course, my friend.
I love it. The crypto hunter. How'd you get that?
Well, it was more or less a label that was attached to me because I was very much interested in the cryptozoological point of view when it came to UFOs and other alien beings. And that search of mine, adding more of a terrestrial point of view when it looks into the potential origins of what we're having contact with, kind of guided me into being known as a person that went beyond the realm of his original studies and into an expanded field of various studies that most of us use when we're investigating UFOs, ancient cultures, symbolism, and the like. And crypto is basically the Greek for hidden. So the crypto hunter is anybody that looks for anything hidden or is a mystery to them and they want to get to the bottom of.
Lots to cover with you tonight, John, including, of course, your most recent appearance on the UFO Hunters. I want to talk with you about that later tonight.
Yeah.
For those who are getting to know John Rhodes, tell me a little bit about your work with the reptilian humanoids and exactly how you got into that.
Well, I started hearing reports coming in from individuals at UFO meetings in small communities that I would attend just to be an observer and also to participate in discussion to some level. And I was hearing reports of people talking about meeting, instead of the small gray aliens or a humanoid being, something like a Nordic type, they were discussing meeting something that was very impressive. They were describing a tall reptilian humanoid being that was extremely muscular and intelligent and appeared to be directing the small grays. And the more and more of these reports I heard, I started looking into the potential for there being a reality to them and a pattern being seen here and emerging for the first time. And I started looking into the sciences of the potentials of extraterrestrial life being a product of Earth evolution by researching some of the most well-known paleontologists of our time and seeing what they thought were the potentials for the evolving of the human form within the reptilian lineage of our own planet. And these beings are the ones that I've been discussing with you for a number of years now, and as you have witnessed yourself through interviewing various guests, mm-hmm. it's a tidal wave at this point of activity happening where really the grays are kind of taking the background of the entire UFO contact picture, and it's turning out more and more of these reptilian humanoids are being seen. So it's a fantastic study, and I think everybody else who has ever heard about it has enjoyed traveling along with us during our exploration as well.
When I heard people like David Icke talking about reptilians, I thought, oh, come on. And then, of course, as you know, he tied them into certain families on this planet. Might not be too far-fetched after all, John, huh?
Well, everything comes down to a matter of genetics when we're talking about biology on our planet. And as we've seen more and more, genetics is something that can be manipulated and customized. And you can put data into genetics. It wasn't a number of years ago I saw an article in the paper where the Central Intelligence Agency had figured out a way to actually put code into a person's genetics, and it would replicate through their body. So on another location, only a drop of their blood would be needed to be able to decode the information inside his genetic makeup. So we have gotten far, far, far into the field of genetics research, and the entire subject itself is revealing more and more of the potential for just fascinating things to exist on our planet.
John, paint us a picture, if you would. Kind of describe, in your way, what a reptilian looks like.
a collage of the descriptions reported to the center since the 1990s, and even to myself before as an investigator. We've come up with the overall image of something that can be on average six to seven foot tall or 7.5 foot tall humanoid being with a physical structure generally similar to that of a human, two legs, two arms, a head in the same position on the body, the eyes, of course, two, no ears, just a small scale or flap, no hair at all, large back sloping cranium, heavy brow, vertical slit pupils on elongated, almost side round, wraparound eyes at times, slits for nose, lipless mouth. We have also seen them to have three fingers with an opposable thumb and having a very large quarterback-like frame to where if they're in an average apartment, they would have to stoop in order to walk around in the apartment and duck below hallways in order to walk from one room into another. And these are very intimidating-looking beings, simply because when you see their claws and look at their size and their frame and their muscular tone, you would think that they could just slice you open as much as look at you, and it is pretty awe-inspiring for the experiencers.
Personality, what are they like?
They can range from being benevolent to being almost like those of mentors to others that have been acting rather aggressively towards their human contacts, and at times, acting to intimidate them through physical gestures. We haven't had anybody come back yet that I've ever heard of that has had a death occur to an encounter with a reptoid, although I think that the potential for one occurring has always been there.
Well, I can't remember the name of that Dennis Quaid movie a long time ago when he landed on another planet. Do you remember that?
Enemy Mine.
Was that it?
Enemy Mine, right.
Okay. What some people have described as a reptilian, and you had pieces of it, mm-hmm. are very close to that creature that was on that planet.
Played by Lou Gossett Jr., yeah.
Exactly. Which, by the way, was a very benevolent type of being. I mean, he was a friendly kind of E.T.,
right, androgynous, too, so able to get to have masculine tendencies to it to be able to give birth to an offspring. And also the message of the film was trying to show how we can be so more similar than we are unalike. Now, remember that when you're thinking of extraterrestrial beings, we must, if we're going to have open contact or at least even private contact with one, we have to focus on our similarities rather than our dislikes if we're going to overcome it.
And, that's a good point.
You know, they did show that in that film. And interestingly enough, it showed that even the sense of family can extend, because when Louis Gossett Jr. died, the character died, the offspring was then raised up as a young boy by his friend, the human
that's
being.
Right. I remember that.
They called him a Drac. The Louis Gossett Jr.'s character was a Drac, as in Draco.
Let's talk about some of the examples of reported sightings of these creatures on this planet. What do we have?
Well, we have some really interesting ones. The ones that I tend to stick with are the ones that never change. Stories that tend to change over time, I seem to dismiss that because of trying to remain objective in it. When stories continually change, I wonder at times if the experiencer is just looking for attention and some of these events may be fictionalized or even just extensions of their own imagination into dream state. So I have to make sure I keep a channel on which reports I pay a focused attention to.
Sure.
One in particular one that I found quite fascinating was by a person by the name of Tal, T-A-L. And his story never shifted over the last 18 years that I've known this individual. He experienced an account back in 1979 at Santa Fe, New Mexico, in which in the middle of the night he awoke. And at the foot of his bed, looking at a chart on a wall that he had drawn of UFO activity in the Four Corners area and potential cavern entrances into the inner Earth, suspected inner Earth that exists there, he saw the reptoid looking at the chart and then turned to look at him. he immediately backed up on his bed and grabbed an object and threw it at the reptilian humanoid that he was looking at. And he said that it kind of had a bioluminescent glow to it, but it was also translucent to where he could see the dresser on the other side of the reptilian humanoid as he was looking at him. And the object he threw went through the being. And he said that at this same time, there were two other persons in the house, one of which was having blood drawn from her that she reported. This was a multiple eyewitness sighting of this reptoid encounter, by the way. And she was having blood drawn. And eventually she got into the field of mental health. And years and years later, most recently, there was a case that I was investigating in which somebody had a sighting up near the outside of Mariposa, California. And this individual that was lying on the carpet 18 years ago was actually up in this area recently, and she had a case encounter in which her cross-eyed condition was corrected after the event. And during consequent research that was done in the area, one other individual had their vision problem corrected at that location as well. So again, the reptilian thing seems to be associated with healing as well. But in his case, he said this being standing at the foot of his bed was looking at him, and there seemed to be a transfer of information that occurred between him and this reptoid, and it looked as if it was a plasma, a geometric plasma ball that came from the reptoid and towards him, and that when it had actually moved through his face, he could feel it go in his head, and there was an explosion of information that was too fast to be able to view or anything. After this encounter, consequently, he had a sudden interest in optics and light optics, and he immediately went down and signed up for an optics course that he did not have any prior training in. They advised him to take a test for a couple years and come back and take the test, and he refused, and he took the test that very day, in which he was immediately brought into the class at an accelerated pace as an exception. His sudden knowledge that was well beyond his scholastic training or educational level was noticed as a student in the class. And the next thing you know, this individual was not at the class anymore because it was made to be uncomfortable for him to continue to stay there, because that's not what they were going to allow to happen. In cases like this, you have to suspect that individual was perhaps approached and used as to gain access into some job level, security level thing that has to do with optics and plasmas, as perhaps as a Manchurian candidate to report back information. So you have to look, when you look at other beings like this, you have to look at them almost as if they're a foreign nation, and exactly how spying is going on from one country to another, because we do seem to have interactions in which people are pushed into positions of either health and helping people. And that's really kind of like counter to what you would think when you think they'd push somebody into fiber, into optics or laser technologies. So, but there is definitely some sort of a pattern that's revealed like that.
When people have these encounters with these reptoids, does it change their lives? I would think it would, John.
Pretty much forever. Sadly, there are some people who find it so shocking that they either immediately go into denial, and the subject tends to be one of that repels them entirely without even wanting to discuss why. Others, on the other hand, these beings that we are meeting are truly harbingers of transformation, just like the symbolism that has been laid down for so many thousands of years of human consciousness reincarnating on the planet and seeing these same images over and over again. It's embedded itself into human consciousness. So that is part of the awakening that's occurring right now. Remember, in the Bible, it says that they start in the Eve garden with the in Adam and Eve talking to a serpent that could walk upright on two legs and had two arms. The later later versions of King James versions of the Bible, they took the two legs and two arms part off, and they made it into an allegory about he had his hands and legs cut off. But that was a walking, talking being. And at the end, in Revelation, they talk about the return of the dragon. So you have this perfect symbolism of the Ouroboros showing that, you know, human consciousness and human experience started in some way associated with these beings, and we might at some point be coming up to contact with them again.
I did not hear when you were describing them anything about tails. They don't have tails, I guess. I'm thinking of like an alligator.
Right. Some of them do. Most of them do not. Remember, the description I gave you is kind of a collage of the majority of the contacts we have had reported. There are other beings that look more like dinosaurs that have snouts that are shorter. Some of them have tails. Some of them have crests underneath their chins that make it look like beards at times, like a bearded dragon. There's a variation of reptilian humanoid beings, just as there is a variation of human beings on the surface of our planet, where we have different colors, we obviously have different sizes, we have different configurations all over the place, but yet we're all humans. So there are some of these other types that have been encountered through the years, it seems like the expression of nature has been just as glorious on their side as far as reptiles as it has been on mammals. Because remember, it was just not long ago they realized, oh yeah, the dinosaurs, some of them did survive. They became birds, and look at these. You know, they can even mimic human speech. What other animal comes closer to than that than an evolved dinosaur, my friends?
Have you been noticing a pattern at all here, John, with these creatures?
Yeah, the patterns that seem to have evolved are demonstrating that you have an increased contact of potential when you're alone, usually in rural areas. I think, may be a time when they can perceive a contact would be written off because nobody else was around to testify to it or be another eyewitness to the event, so the deniability is easier. It's also, we've noticed that there's this thing about when you have an encounter like this, there is a pattern showing that the people who fight the experience, who are denying it or feeling that they've met a demon or something like that, who are put into a state of high stress, this becomes a long battle in which there are few survivors. It has had terrible consequences, even to the point where some people have committed murder in the name of this subject. And that's a fact.
John, go ahead. I'm sorry.
And you can also use it to do something really beautiful with your life and turn around and look at it as something that you can identify with, because if we are truly evolved beings and the earliest of land life forms came from a reptile, then way down deep inside our consciousness gene pool that has that library of information and memory, that's what we appeal to.
And we're continuing to get more and more reports of reptoids, reptilians?
Yeah, we are. This can be associated to various things. There's been more and more people, first of all, are coming out and talking about it because the idea of fear with this subject, saying that we're all somehow victims of this reptilian underworld and this horrible thing that's, you know, just making us into slaves of this planet, people are getting over that now. We had that for many years where people were saturated with that belief in the subject matter, but it's changing. More and more people are finding that they have something deep within themselves that says this is loving. There's something peaceful in this, too. There's the other side we have just only begun to meet.
John, when we come back, let's talk about why some people believe they're being contacted by demons or the devil. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. With our special guest tonight, John Rhodes. Hey, have you signed up yet for the free Coast Zone newsletter? It's an email newsletter. You get it every day. Just go to coasttocoastam.com and you can click and sign up for that. Also, if you haven't signed up for Streamlink yet, for just pennies a day, you can get special podcasting and downloads. And they're working on expanding that 90-day past programs to considerably more as they reach deep into the archives. So they're working on that as well. And also, when you go to coasttocoastam.com, take a look at the preview for the new website, which will be coming out very soon as well. We'll be back in a moment with John Rhodes on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, John Rhodes. John, let's talk about these reptilians. In the biblical days, when, you know, they said the devil came, and they, you know, the description is kind of close to some of these reptilians. Is it possible that these demons, these devils, might be the reptilians?
I believe entirely that that might be the case, because we have to see it from their historical point of view. They didn't know the term alien, or they weren't thinking of things that God could have created other than themselves. That's the old way of thinking, but that's where they were. And to have something like that appear, if it's not an angel, then it's otherwise classified, which immediately meant a demon. And, of course, that surrendered all your power to the church again. And that's just where, in ancient times, they originally intended to go to be a spiritual leader for humanity, but ended up being, in many cases, a corrupted institution that just wants to have you confess to them and so they can manipulate you and your consciousness.
The evil side of the reptilians, what do they want? What are they after?
Some people have said that they believe that the intentions of demonic or evil reptilian humanoids are to somehow agitate you into certain types of physical states so they can drink or take from your auric field the energies of your body. I guess this is very Matrix-like when you think of the person being kept in the pod where just their life juices are being used for their little alien ever-ready batteries. But in cases where that's concerned, if we're talking about interdimensional beings, there's a potential for the something to be milking us at times, just like, you know, there is with the rest of the rest of nature. We see it in many cases where animals create a symbiotic relationship. As long as they're not harming each other and it's not unhealthy, then it's a symbiosis that's reached and it's okay. But some of the evil ones, you know, they want to whip you up into a state of terror or fear, and when you do that, you're immediately giving all your power away. And you and I know that. We've lived long enough to know that when you sit there locked in fear, you're immediately, you know, giving all of your power away to whoever is the first one there that you think can handle the situation or have an answer for you. But this is coming. We're coming towards an age of personal responsibility, because your superconscious has a chance to launch out from here in many lifetimes to come if you just ride this wave of energy we're about to be hit with and take every aspect of yourself, the good part and the bad part. And, you know, that bad part of nature, which is expressed in these reptilian humanoids, is there just as much as it is expressed in humans. So, you know, the reasons they're doing these can come down to the energy fields, also disinformation purposes, because they don't want us to perhaps appreciate or like what might be headed this way, which is a reference I'm making to the legends and lores and also modern beliefs in many cases in which we experiencers have said that they have been told that there's an approaching wave of reptilian humanoids coming back to this planet that left a long time ago, and that when they return, this is going to be for the return of the feathered serpent gods, as they were known in ancient times. And you and I have talked about that as far as the Mexico activity. But the evil ones are out there, and some of them just as much not like human, just as certain people don't like other animals, and they're treated as such. Another thing we got to remember is that when a person encounters something that looks like that, they're immediately so locked in fear because their brain is saying that their life is forever changed from this point on of what they're seeing, that it's real easy to be absolutely terrified and come out of this feeling terrified, even though it may not have been aggressive mood or a mean move at all physically by the alien or the reptoid. But they're there. Don't don't get me wrong, they're there, and we have to be very vigilant and aware that they can be just as evil, if not a hell of a lot more evil than even humans have ever possibly expressed themselves to be.
And you just mentioned interdimensional. I was going to ask you that these visitations, are people seeing them in craft, or are they just appearing?
Both. They appear in rooms, just as the grays have appeared to human experiencers and contactees. We have also had reports come in where they've seen them on craft, and interestingly, underground, where they know that they were underground. Apparently, the family of ours that we are not allowed to know about on this planet, there's a great number of them that live underground, and they've sought refuge there in ancient times because of the different types of disasters that could befall us because the sun, the things like we were expecting, like Mitch Patros' network, they talk about the sun having the potential for destroying surface life on Earth. They recognized that a long time ago, and they all took off underground, except we're just sitting out here like sitting ducks, you know, and people can talk all they want about getting out of the way, but, you know, these ancient cultures have gotten out of the way a long time ago, and we need to probably reinvent America by moving populations from the shorelines, bringing them inland and sinking large subterranean cities so we would have saved energy from heating and cooling and also protection from anything above. We need to reinvent American civil defense, and potentially this is the kind of thing that experiencers are coming back from feeling like has to be done.
How many other cryptos or UFO researchers are beginning to study the reptilian humanoid phenomena?
Not many cryptozoologists per se, because when you are investigating, you know, life on this earth, as soon as you start thinking or saying, talking about advanced potential for intelligence and communication, you're already considered fringe even in that field, because they're trying to give themselves as much credibility as they can in a field that's already disregarded by mainstream science. So, no, not many people in cryptozoology have launched into it. But on the other hand, a lot of interested researchers and lecturers and authors now more and more are starting to focus in on this because, like I said, it's here now, and it's a happening thing.
John, with this work that you do, and you do key in primarily on the reptilian end of it, is there anything that you have found that shows that in the ancient days that these reptilians battled other ETs on this planet?
The Mahabharata, the ancient Indian works, have clearly demonstrated through their descriptions that the people who were writing these things down and storing memory on different types of artifacts and papers, they were trying to record a war in heaven. And when we think of the terms that they even used in a war in heaven, we have to look as far back as the original war in heaven, that story that was passed down through modern religious works, such as the Christian works in the Bible. We're talking about Archangel Michael and his angels fighting the dragon and his angels. So we're looking at that same type of biblical prophecy. The Arabs have the same thing when they talk about the different things that are supposedly coming to pass. In addition to that, Mesoamericans have spoken openly about their beliefs that Quetzalcoatl, the feathered serpent, is going to be returning back to the earth to have a mainstream presence here once again, and to reestablish his kingdom.
Well, once that happens, then we're all in for one heck of a time, John, aren't we?
Absolutely. All of the symbols are coming together, even the fact that we have the crossing, the transit of Venus across the surface of the sun, which is occurring on I think it's June 8th, 2012. The dead center of the path will actually take it directly over Central America and Mexico. And if we think about the solar eclipse and what happened down over Mexico in July 11th, 1991, we might be seeing another serpent symbol that's associated with also Venus is associated with Christ and Lucifer, all of them, all of these ancient, important religious icons. and they all seem to be coming to a culminating symbolic convergence around this period of time. At the same time, we're expecting these solar pulses from the sun that, because the longer it stays still, the more it's going to ramp up and start hitting us hard. And when these things occur, I know I'm getting off the question, but when these things occur, it's important to know that our perceptions, human perceptions, are expected to change very much they did the way they did back in 1333 during the Great Black Death, in which so much of Europe died and the great cataclysms were happening. Afterwards, there was the birth of the Renaissance, which actually gave rise to new sounds in music, new 3D perception in artwork, the use of more vibrant art tones. There was a perceptual shift that occurred back then, and I believe that we're about to go through the same thing. And the patterns that are emerging all kind of point in that same general direction, that something amazing, something truly amazing is about to happen, and we're the generation to see it come to pass.
If you were somehow in the midst of a reptilian, what would you ask it, John?
That's an interesting question, isn't it? So many years of searching, what would the first words be?
Exactly.
How about, I would have to reassure it that I come in peace.
Do you think it would care?
I don't think that I would have a chance to even realize what hit me if it did care. You know, if it decided it didn't like it. But I think that peace is what it's really all about. We have to live in symbiosis with each other. And if it was coming to harm me, I would just have to take what was coming for me, because, or what I was going to get, because I've been looking for them for this long. Eventually, maybe one day I'll be standing toe to toe with one. At that time, you know what? I'll have to think deeply. I think I would be speechless. I don't know what else to say. I would probably be speechless.
Do you believe that they are also involved in the alien abduction phenomena?
Most assuredly. I know that we've had increased numbers of reports where the Greys, even though they appear to be somewhat of a independent species of their own, there are some of them that are in working directly for the reptilian humanoids. They've been seen directing the Greys around on the ship without question. And so they do seem to be kind of in charge of the show as far as that's concerned during abductions. But we also know that there is another cast of the reptilian humanoids known as the Draco. These beings have leathery wings like that you would perceive in a bat to have. They would have protuberances coming out of their head that are like horns. They're actually cranial cavities that have resonance capabilities for communication. And we also have heard that the Draco have been seen, some of them with a bronze, dark reddish kind of a scale, and others having that of a white powder, like a white powdery scale. And the white ones, the albinos, as they appear to be, seem to be the elitist of all the cast of the reptilian humanoid species groups.
John, it's a fascinating field. Next hour, I want to talk about your work in underground caverns and what you've come across there. Is there anything we need to be worried about with these visitations?
No. I mean, the horrible thing about it is that it's your sanctuary. When you're in your room at night, that's your sanctuary. That's an invasion, regardless of who was in there. I don't care who was in there. If they're not my family or anything, that's an invasion of my sanctuary. I think that immediately hits people when they have an encounter. So, it's hard to get over the fact that you're never really truly secure from anybody coming into your home. But as far as a group coming this way or anything that might happen, I think that we just have to watch this large game play out. We are just actors on this large stage. It's just that we happen to now see that there are characters far beyond our imagination that are going to be taking a part in what's going to be happening here. It's definitely almost like a classical mythological play that's getting ready to act itself out for human consciousness to witness.
You know, they say that there are, you know, a number of different species of ETs out there, this being one of them. Is there a variation of the reptilians?
Yeah, there are, like the caste distinctions, like I was just talking to you about, the Draco versus regular
right.
humanoids. The grays are also thought to be a hybrid between reptile and human, but one that was perhaps created to be more of a cloned race than anything else, just as something that could be given instructions, like robotic instructions, so it could follow out. I don't know how they would strip it of consciousness, but I guess biologically they may have studied consciousness long enough to know which part of what brain structure or something would be required for it, and maybe take that out from these gray robot-type clones. But they are considered partly reptilian humanoid to a certain degree, but they're not like the pure grays. Others have been seen to be quite small. Just as if, you know, there have been the hobbits that were discovered off the islands in Java, you know, that were only 2 to 3 feet tall, you know, so have the reptoids also been seen to be rather large or be rather short. And that's what makes it hard to pin it down with the reports, because people are saying, well, I'm hearing all these different stories of different types of alien reptilians, and it's not just one kind, so I can't really believe it. But the point being is that... as I've stated, there are as many variations in form just as there are with humans.
What do you think of Ike's theories, that there are some families here that are reptilian blood?
I believe that we all have genetics that are leading back to the ancient reptiles. So if we want to point fingers, we have to recognize we all contain that. It's just that some of these guys that are ruling this planet are truly so separated from it seems like separated from the global consciousness that we perceive them as being something of some sort of an evil character, and I guess that would be true. I wouldn't say it's as they're part of a bloodline. You know, the only blood that was ever pulled off the Shroud of Turin proved to be Rh negative, which already has been established as Rh negatives have a higher degree of reptilian humanoid or alien contact, more so than most other blood groups. This has been clearly established before. So this means that there's only a small population of this planet that have some sort of genetic difference in their blood or something like that, that the aliens seem to be following along and looking at. And from our research, the protein on the surface of the cell that makes you Rh negative, it really is something that's used as a transfer for carbon in and out of the cell wall. It helps accelerate the exchange of carbon, which means that Rh negatives are actually born or made, I'm being careful using that term,
sure,
or hybrided to actually be in better health in a highly polluted environment.
John, do we know if there were any ancient caves that had depictions, drawings of these reptilians on them?
Yeah, the Native American Indians have a lot of different petroglyphs that show the anthropomorphic shapes fusing humans with different animals. They do have those with the reptiles as well. There's a lot of Native American mythology that points directly back to serpents and the snake people, as they called them. And, of course, the little grays, which I already pointed out, are the little ant people. They're seen in these traditional forms and throughout American mythology. And the petroglyphs are just a record of their presence here, just as in Egypt they tried to build the pyramids as a storehouse of information because it could weather the sands of time nicely, although time's changing slowly, as we've been seeing.
Well, they do. Times continue to change. Stay with us, John Rhodes, because up next, your legendary Lost Grand Canyon underground city and some of your work. And then the final hour, we'll open up the phone lines with John Rhodes. Crypto Hunter, I'm George Norrie. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.